content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Avery Lewis from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article that will be covered today is called Sister Outsider by Audre Lorde. She is the literary spotlight. In the scholarly magazine, Kahlua, lesbian poet Audre Lorde once said, "My sexuality is part and parcel of who I am, and my poetry comes from the intersection of me and my worlds." Lorde, in her life and in her writings, dismantled so many systems that tried to diminish her and her family. She outlines the lessons learned in her seminal text, Sister Outsider, the feminist classic tome of 15 essays and speeches originally published in 1984. The work tackles the junctions of racism, sexism, classism, ageism, and sexuality in Persuasive Reflections, which have stood the test of time, reissued with a bold new cover and an illuminating foreword by poet Mahogany L. Brown. Lorde's generational truths still cut deep into the darkened soul of America. Sister Outsider's teachings by one of our most revered elder stateswomen should be read by everyone. The next article is titled, He Writes for Them. There was a moment during Jason Reynolds' rise as a young adult author and poet when he turned his back on newfound fame in New York City and moved to be near the quiet suburbs of Prince George's County, Maryland, where he grew up. The decision came after the success of his 2014 YA novel, When I Was the Greatest. My mother turned 70, and that was enough for me, says Reynolds, who had already been named a National Book Award finalist for young people's literature. I love New York, but not more than I love my mother. And I'd already sacrificed enough time away from my family, so I left. As a major figure in the literary world, Reynolds, who is currently working on his 14th book, unapologetically creates for young black readers. From a teen reeling after witnessing his brother's murder to two citified brothers spending a summer with their blind grandfather in Virginia, Reynolds' characters speak directly to our community. He's even added a Marvel comic novel to his canon with Miles Morales, Spider-Man. Who else is there to write for? As far as I'm concerned, he says of his commitment to telling stories of black youth, I'd rather go ahead and tap into these kids who are still malleable, but who also have insight into things that we don't know, with vision that we no longer have. Who have imaginations just that have already been zapped from us? Reynolds' desire to use his voice in this way nearly waned when he first started out in 2005. He had no idea how to pitch a book. I ran around New York City, running into publishing companies or trying to, but getting stopped at every security gate, he remembers. And even when he acquired a new agent in 2012, Reynolds says publisher after publisher after publisher turned down his tome. They didn't believe readers would care about tales centered on black kids. The rejection only made him hungrier. I'm going to make sure no one will ever say no to me again. That is how I'm built, he says, now of his steadfast productivity. In his latest work, Look Both Ways, a tale told in 10 blocks, Reynolds gives us glimpses of middle school life by zooming in on a handful of streets as he follows students home from school. The award-winning writer explains that his work speaks mostly to middle school students because that was a pivotal time in his own life. Having skipped the second grade, he was always the youngest in his class. As a preteen, he was also dealing with his parents' split and his enrollment in private school because his mother thought it would save my life, he says. From the page, he now hopes to speak to young Black readers who might be going through their own defining experiences. I love these kids, Reynolds says. I'm just here to bear witness to their lives because I believe that it is in bearing witness that everything is made real. A Funny Kind of Love is the title of the next article in the entertainment section. The complicated, wayward messiness of love can often feel like the plot of a romantic comedy. It's a feeling that Boston-born, Los Angeles-based singer Timar has captured in song. She recently tapped into the lead-off artist of executive producer and actress Issa Rae's newly established label, Radio, a partnership Rae struck up with Atlantic Records. Timar's latest effort, the cheeky bubblegum R&B favorite Kind of Love, would fit seamlessly in Insecure's soundtrack. The humorous video for the ditty, which includes an appearance by Rae as the singer's snarky therapist, follows Timar and a number of other women as they design the perfect man and create a wish list for the perfect relationship. The single is from the Haitian Americans' as yet untitled album, which is set to be released in 2020. Just as with her previously released indie work, the LP thanks for the chapstick and the singles One Job and Bentella. The artist hopes listeners will see her as a tea-spilling close friend. I want people to feel like they have a new sonic bestie, she says, someone to vibe with when they are alone without having to feel alone. Timar's music certainly has the captivating sound that fans will enjoy. It's not hard to imagine supporters grooving along to every beat during a live performance. There will also be videos for various tracks, more visuals, more wild concepts on the way. The songbird promises, I wish for a world tour, that would be a dream, and to make a limited amount of replicas of my retired teacups. Style DNA. Do you remember your first hero? Ebony Davis does. She recalls her great-grandfather with an infectious joy that transports her back to the late 1990s in Seattle. He organized these huge community meetings, she remembers with a smile. It was called Redemption Hour, and he'd invite everyone, drug addicts, the unemployed, the hungry, and he'd help people. Back then, the young Davis was just as dazzled by her great-grandfather's activism as she was by his style. He was very Afrocentric, she recalls. Very back to Africa in his way of thinking. And every time we'd have a reunion, he'd come in his African wax print two pieces. So when Davis was, at 26, arrived in Africa for the first time, she immediately felt at home. It was December 2018. The place was Accra, Ghana. And the vibe was electric, ignited by the nation's first official Year of the Return. What caught her eye amid the festivities? The vivid African wax print fabrics called Ankara that she remembered from her childhood. All I could think was, Africans are so fly, she says. Everything is made to fit their body. Everyone has matching headpieces. Davis paid homage to that sense of style with this Essence photo shoot, which she conceptualized and directed. In each scene shot in Accra's Art Center, she models a modern piece hand-sewn from traditional African fabric. It's an effortless style sleigh, but for Davis, the chic prints are less about fashion and more about fractals. Somewhere in this process, I realized the power that African prints have, she says. Something very deep is happening within the intricacies of that pattern. It tells stories. They speak to us on a subliminal level because our subconscious mind only understands symbols. When you look at the patterns, the subconscious mind can decipher what that pattern is saying. The visionary's fiery intellectual analysis echoes her approach to everything else, so it's no surprise that since her entry into professional modeling, she has turned the industry on its head. Literally, in 2016, when Davis kept encountering the coded fashion racism that pressures Black models to transform and conform, she responded by refusing to relax her hair. She went a step further and louder with a passionate piece in Harper's Bazaar about fashion's role and responsibility in the face of racism. Within months, she took her message to the TED Talk stage, where her speech titled "Black Girl Magic in the Fashion Industry" quickly went viral. Since then, she's been acclaimed as a master storyteller and new age activist who uses her platform to spotlight inequality, especially within fashion. And like that of civil rights activist Angela Davis before her, Ebony's advocacy has been distilled into a single symbol, her hair. In images from her stunning Calvin Klein campaign to her groundbreaking Sports Illustrated swimsuit shoot, Davis Afro remains a crowning glory and a constant inspiration to millennials who are moved by her example to be empowered and love themselves. What does it look like to love yourself? She asks. This question has been my metric for the last 3 years in my quest for self-improvement and self-actualization. I realize that it's through discipline and accountability that you prove your love for yourself. As with Angela Davis, it's that blend of militant conviction, deep intellect, and innate compassion that has expanded this Davis's audience around the world. Instead of leveraging her growing fame for the glitz of a full-time fashionista, she's opted for something much more aligned with her iconic namesake, civic involvement. Through her nonprofit called Daughter, Davis provides an opportunity for women and men of color to return to Africa. There are so many deserving people, and it really is a birthright, she explains. In a literal sense, it's really what we deserve. That's the least we are owed. Through her platform, Davis is helping to restore that birthright. Since her first trip, Daughter has been sending Black Americans to the motherland to visit countries like Togo, Benin, and Ghana. These are experiences we want people to process and share and grow the seeds of their community. She says, once again, the elder Davis comes to mind. He taught his great-granddaughter to lead the action, not lip service. When the parallels are pointed out, Davis gets quiet. Then a smile breaks across her face as she speaks in her characteristic soft and serious style. I don't believe in coincidences, enough said. Masterclass with Tanya Sam, the Real Housewives of Atlanta star and tech entrepreneur, dishes on the playful pieces that define her inviolable style. They said it was a competition, but no one said you could only have one look, says Tanya Sam, joking about a now infamous Real Housewives of Atlanta episode in season 11's Bitch Stole My Talent Showdown. The then newbie battled it out with fashionista Marlo Hampton in a friendly best dress competition. Sam sported a Christian Dior power suit, then peeled off layers to reveal a matching swimsuit, also by the French brand. She won by adhering to the fashion mantra that has carried her throughout her successful career. There are no rules. From the first pair of Louis Vuittons she purchased in Las Vegas to her favorite Chanel boots, the Real Housewives of Atlanta star and tech entrepreneur's fashion obsession comes from her parents. She inherited her Ghanaian father's and British mother's unique aesthetic. Africans are always stylish, especially Ghanaians, she muses. We drip, and that's a historical drip. It's in our bones to be stylish. Introduced to Real Housewives of Atlanta after frequenting Nene Leakes' shop, Swag Boutique, Sam garnered attention with her show-stopping ensembles. She and her fiancé, tech businessman Paul Judge, are expanding their portfolio by investing in Atlanta's A3C Festival, which celebrates the legacy and future of hip-hop. They also bankroll startup companies and minority-owned businesses. Sam balances her work life with indulging in luxe finds. The sartorial maven's swoon-worthy closet resembles a glitzy showroom featuring the most sought-after designer pieces. A cozy fireplace and plush chair provide a respite when fashion overload strikes. After all, the designer labels are many. Jimmy Choo, Louis Vuitton, and Miu Miu shoes crowd floor to ceiling shelves on the left, while Dior, Chanel, and YSL bags fill shelves on the right. I have had purchases that are memorable and probably cost under $100, she says. But you remember your big purchases. After 8 years in a male-dominated industry, Sam continues to dress for success. It's like putting on your superhero cape, she says. Mine may be Oscar de la Renta, but that doesn't make it any less Marvel Comics superhero than Captain America. Behind the scenes, designer spotlight. Francie Girard has dabbled in various industries, but her latest endeavor was born out of necessity. In October, the former pro volleyball player turned Wall Street exec launched the Sixes, a stylish pants line for women over 5'9". The new venture has been a long time coming for the native New Yorker, who has struggled to outfit her now 6'1" frame since the fourth grade. I've always found it difficult to find clothes that were high quality, fit well, and represented my style, Girard explains. The Sixes is the culmination of wanting to provide a destination for women who have experiences similar to mine. Based on the outpouring of support, plenty of folks can relate. I've gotten some really nice messages from women who are thrilled to have someone focus on them, Girard says. Hearing from them reinforces my reasons for starting this brand, intent on offering more than just the prerequisite extra length. Girard developed slacks that actually take a woman's shape into consideration, with flattering cuts and supportive fabrics, and the pieces longer rise and larger pockets that sit lower on the hip intuitively accommodate long arms and large hands. The designs are also cherubic. The current lineup consists of a bucket tote in 16 options in sizes 0 to 14 and up to a 41-inch inseam. The Jennifer, a flattering high-waist trouser with sheer side panels, and the 1970s-inspired Saletra flared jean are popular standouts. Prices range from $45 to $268 at thesixes.com. Gerard's whimsical launch campaign poked fun at an experience that bonds tall women. The shortest man in the room will often approach you to strike up conversation, crack a joke, or buy you a drink, she says, laughing. Keeping these commonalities in mind while embracing a playful approach to dressing is how the Sixes plan to keep a leg up. Black Women in Hollywood. Setting a primetime drama in the Black and Latinx New York City ballroom scene of the 80s and early 90s immediately caught our attention. But it's the women at the helm of the groundbreaking series who make Pose what it is. As part of the first TV show in history to feature a large number of transgender actors, as well as trans activist Mock, who co-writes and directs, these ladies are outspoken about trans rights and visibility, calling attention to women who often go ignored. I'm waiting for our Black community to recognize our stories, because our stories are not just about us, they are about you too, Ross said from the Emmy's red carpet. They're about our sisters, our mothers, our cousins, and everyone else, and how they're affected. Not only their missteps, but how they learn to love us. Lashana Lynch. Last April, the filmmakers behind James Bond's 25th movie hosted a global press conference at the Golden Eye Resort in Jamaica. For rising actress Lynch, standing on the land that birthed her family, who would later migrate to Britain, where she was born, was surreal. Rumors had been swirling that she would inherit the role of 007. At this press event, Lynch's part in such a huge plot twist was crystallized as those reports were confirmed. Weeks earlier, her Captain Marvel had scorched the box office, raking in more than $150 million on opening weekend. Her Bond film, No Time to Die, written by Fleabag's Phoebe Waller-Bridge, arrives in April. It's going to be history-making, Lynch says of the flick, and that makes me feel very grateful for the kinds of people who are making moves and waves in this industry. Melina. For Melina, a first-time feature director, the audience she's aiming to reach with Queen and Slim is clear. While it's for generational consumption, it's particularly for Black people to remember who that they are. I'm just trying to speak to us, from us, by us, she says. I'm a Black woman, and I just speak my truth. Born and bred in the Bronx, the daughter of a Jamaican and Afro-Cuban mom and a Greek and Jewish father, Melina developed an artistic clarity that prepared her for her earlier work, shaping music videos for music's biggest stars, Beyonce, Whitney Houston, Rihanna, J-Lo, and more. That work garnered her Grammy Awards for music direction for Rihanna's We Found Love and Beyonce's Formation. However, in 2017, career-shifting stint directing Lena Waithe's award-winning Thanksgiving episode of Master of None solidified their collaboration and led Melina and Waithe to team up for Queen and Slim. Waithe pens the script from a story by author James Trey, while Melina makes her big screen debut with the assurance of a born storyteller. This film really taught me to trust my instincts and to know that we matter, she says. Niecy Nash, years before embarking on the role of the ever-enterprising boss, Deshawn Sims on Claws, Nash was the one who brought the laughs. But even as she was cutting up on the Reno 911, sashaying on Dancing with the Stars, and hosting Clean House, for which she won a Daytime Emmy, Nash knew she had more to offer. Convincing Hollywood gatekeepers she could bring the drama required some patience. For a long time, the industry was polite, but they were like, "Dear, you have Elaine. You do broad comedy. Stay over there," she says. "I had to be a lady in waiting and bide my time until they started to recognize." Last fall, she tugged on our heartstrings with her portrayal of the mother of Central Park Five's Corey Wise in the Netflix series When They See Us. She helped paint a vivid portrait of a community fractured by the legal system and shined a national spotlight on the men we now know and celebrate as the Exonerated Five. For Nash, who at age five set out to be Black, fabulous, and on TV after seeing Lola Falana on screen, art is about entertainment and upliftment. My job is what I do, but my who is to be of service in the world, she says. You have to find those places where you are called to serve. 50 years. As Essence begins its next 50 years, we're honoring the shining stars who defy limitations and expand the richness and complexity of how Black women are portrayed on screen. Now in its 13th year, our Black Women in Hollywood Awards ceremony celebrates 5 decades of the power of our presence. Imagine for a moment not having multifaceted images of Black women, or that characters such as an awkward Black girl with an African name, a bisexual journalist with no qualms about airing her Louisiana family's dirty laundry, and a political fixer with daddy issues were not commanding full names on our screens. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Ebony in Essence. We hope you have enjoyed it and be sure to listen again next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. You have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is readily available as a podcast. And you can listen to this by visiting our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138, 919-832-5138. Have a happy and safe day.